Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Thursday, May 28th, 2026, and this is the AI edition.
Today, we are examining the widening gap between experimental deployment and realized value in the corporate sector. We are moving past the initial era of pilot programs into a much more rigorous period of fiscal scrutiny regarding architectural efficiency.
The era of frictionless adoption is officially over.
Oh, here's the picture. The focus has shifted from simple integration to the measurable return on investment found in deep enterprise implementation.
Uber reportedly burned through its entire annual token budget in just 4 months, and quite frankly, I can't tell if that's a failure of financial planning or just the most expensive way possible to run a ride-sharing app. Today, we are looking at the messy reality of enterprise AI, implementation, the sudden end of the subsidy era, and the desperate search for a real return on investment.
It is less of a planning failure and certainly more of a structural shift in how software is consumed, as we move from predictable seat-based licensing to highly volatile usage-based token models.
Which sounds like a polite way of saying the bill is now unpredictable and potentially infinite.
And that volatility is driving what some are calling a trade-offs era. The era of unlimited experimentation, where companies just threw massive LLMs at every problem regardless of cost, is being replaced by a disciplined focus on efficiency. We're seeing this play out through the rise of specialized smaller models, like Gemma 4 or Cursor's Composer 2.5, which can deliver comparable performance at 1/60th of the cost of flagship models.
So the era of bigger is always better is dead.
Not dead, but heavily scrutinized. The real innovation is moving toward right-sizing models to minimize both environmental footprints and the massive data transport overhead that massive LLMs create. It's about finding the smallest possible model that can still do the job.
Which is great for the planet, I suppose. But I'm more interested in why companies are still struggling to show any actual profit from these deployments. It feels like we're just bolting expensive digital brains onto 199-year-old legacy systems and wondering why they haven't started thinking for themselves.
You've hit on the core of the ROI crisis. As noted in AI in Business, many large corporations are essentially bolting AI agents onto legacy tech stacks rather than rebuilding them. This creates a structural failure where the AI can perform a task, but the surrounding organizational architecture can't actually capture the value.
Right, because if you just add a smart layer on top of a broken process, you've just made a faster way to do a broken process.
We see this in the token laundering phenomenon mentioned in AI in Business, where developers at companies like Amazon are allegedly running bots to generate useless code simply to hit mandated benchmarks for AI-generated content. The metric is being met, but the value is zero.
That is peak corporate efficiency. We haven't improved the product, but look, the graph says we're using 40% more AI.
It's an absurdity that highlights the difference between tool fantasy and actual utility. To move past this, we need to look at what Vinay Babudarala calls a shift from delivery-focused management to discovery-focused orchestration. The goal shouldn't be just deploying a tool, but using frameworks like CPM AI to reduce the software development lifecycle, much like how AT&T reportedly slashed their cycle time from 2.5 months to 1.5 months by integrating AI tools across the SDLC.
So if we stop focusing on the magic of the AI and start focusing on the boring stuff like the actual workflow, that's where the money is.
That's exactly what Lewis Domings from Middle argues. He suggests moving away from generic, disconnected pilot programs, what he calls the pilot trap, and instead targeting specific workflow friction. We shouldn't be asking, can this chatbot talk, but can this model reduce the manual steps and delays in this specific multi-step procurement process?
I love that. It's much less romantic than the future of intelligence, but much more likely to keep the CFO from having a heart attack.
And the cost side is just as critical. Jaden, in a recent analysis of AIChatDaily.com, demonstrated how to reduce daily costs from $50 to near zero by simply switching from real-time image generation to a retrieval system of pre-generated assets. It's the difference between paying for a live painter every time you need a picture and just having a very organized library of existing art.
But even if you optimize the costs, how do you even measure the win? If an employee finishes a task in 10 minutes instead of 20, does that count as a win or do they just get given more work?
That's the fundamental question of the innovation quotient. Connor Grennan argues that we shouldn't look for 10 or 20% productivity boosts. Those are incremental and easily swallowed by organizational overhead. The real ROI is found when AI lifts the cognitive load enough to allow for 10 times transformation of the role itself. It's not about doing the same job faster, it's about using the saved time to reinvent the job.
But there's a massive technical hurdle there, isn't there? If the models are hallucinating or pulling in irrelevant data, you aren't augmenting a human, you're just creating a new type of error correction task.
That's where the infrastructure layer is becoming the new battlefield. We're seeing a shift in capital allocation from training to inference, the actual serving of the model. As the AI Daily Brief points out, this is driving the massive valuations of routing layers like OpenRouter. One way to manage this is through what Practical AI describes as implementing a proxy layer for model context protocol connections. By replacing large polluted tool descriptions with a single endpoint that dynamically retrieves only relevant tools, you can reduce input token consumption by up to 90%.
So instead of handing the AI a whole encyclopedia every time you ask a question, you're giving it a very efficient librarian.
There's a signal here, you're reducing the noise and the cost simultaneously. We're even seeing the emergence of what could be called stochastic reconciliation in infrastructure, moving away from the rigid deterministic logic of traditional Kubernetes toward systems that can use probabilistic reasoning to fix complex, non-conformance issues that standard code simply can't handle.
It sounds like we're building a much more complex, much more expensive, much more probabilistic mess.
It's a high-stakes transition. Even OpenAI is moving down the stack, shifting from being a pure model provider to a service-oriented deployment firm, much like Palantir. They are sending developers directly into client organizations to ensure deep, structural integration. They aren't just selling the engine anymore, they're trying to rebuild the entire car.
And if you don't, you risk being replaced by someone like DeepSeek, who is currently offering models at a massive discount to undercut the major US labs.
Stepping back, the pricing power is eroding. If an enterprise can achieve 75% savings by switching to a more efficient, perhaps even an open source model, the loyalty to the big names evaporates. The real competitive advantage is no longer the architecture itself, but the acquisition of unseen data, those proprietary non-public datasets that no one else has access to.
CIOs need to stop chasing the wow factor and start auditing their token usage per workflow.
Watch for any major enterprise announcing a move toward agentic workflows that doesn't include a corresponding redesign of their underlying data architecture.
But as we move from simple automation to these much more complex autonomous agents, we have to wonder, what happens to the economy when the workers aren't just assisted by AI, but are actually replaced by it? I was reading a pitch earlier that claimed the AI market is worth $26.5 trillion, which is a number so large it feels like someone just typed infinite into a calculator and hit enter.
It's a staggering projection from SpaceX, but if you look at the actual commercial performance of Grok, the reality is much more grounded. Its corporate usage only grew to 7% this year, and it holds a tiny fraction of the paid US consumer market.
So we have a massive gap between the infinite money hype and the actual subscription numbers, which leads me to wonder if we're just building a very expensive way to automate mid-level administrative boredom, or perhaps a way to infinitely scale the production of spam, or even a way to ensure that by 2027, my only remaining job is explaining to a robot why it can't use my credit card to buy more GPU time.
We're moving far beyond simple spam, though. We're entering what the industry is calling the agentic economy, where the shift isn't just about better chatbots, but about autonomous agents that execute complex workflows.
Agentic economy, that sounds like a term designed to make venture capitalists feel like they're investing in the next industrial revolution rather than just a more aggressive version of auto-reply.
It's a structural shift in how software is actually built and used. As Walden Yan from Cognition noted, the emergence of background agents in late 2025, powered by models like GPT-5.2 and Opus 4.5, has moved us from manual model wrapping, where you just build a UI around a prompt, to autonomous execution, where an agent can take a simple specification and turn it into a completed pull request.
So instead of a human engineer checking every line of code, we just have a digital factory running in the background, churning out code that nobody has actually looked at.
Two things stand out. And that's creating a phenomenon called vibe coding, where a huge percentage of developers are pushing AI-generated code without manual review.
Which sounds like a recipe for codebase regression to the worst engineer, where the AI just learns from its own mistakes and eventually turns every repository into a sprawling mess of inefficient nested if-else blocks.
For latent space, that's a very real risk. There's a fear that unvetted AI patterns will become embedded in the codebase and then be used as training patterns, creating an exponential growth of slock or slop.
Great, so we're building a digital landfill of mediocre logic.
But the value is moving elsewhere. The engineering value proposition is shifting from raw coding output to what's being called high-taste product curation, where the human's job is to ensure the end-to-end product is aesthetically and functionally cohesive.
It's less how do I write this loop and more does this feature actually make sense for a human being.
We can trace that further, the scale of this is massive. We're seeing a shift from turn-based prompting to agentic search and agentic workflows. Google is currently implementing its most significant change to search in 25 years by integrating Gemini Spark, which is essentially an agentic browser paradigm. Instead of a local tool, these agents operate on cloud-resident virtual machines, allowing tasks to persist even when you're offline.
So Google isn't just answering my questions anymore. It's essentially running a small, invisible staff of researchers in the cloud who are constantly browsing the web on my behalf.
It's moving from a one-time query utility to a persistent information gathering service. You could tell an agent to monitor the web for a specific type of apartment, and it just does it continuously.
That sounds incredibly useful until the agent decides that the only way to find a good apartment is to aggressively harass every landlord in London via email.
That's why the infrastructure is changing too. We're seeing the rise of composable computers, sandboxes designed specifically for the unpredictable workloads of agents. Ivan Burazin from Daytona suggests we're moving toward a cloud for agents that functions like Stripe or Twilio, providing API-driven access to sandboxes and specialized databases.
Because a standard cloud setup isn't built for a bot that might suddenly decide to spin up 10,000 CPUs to brute force a problem.
The demand is spiky. Traditional capacity planning is becoming obsolete because agentic usage can jump from zero to massive levels instantly. This is driving a shift toward a hybrid compute primitive, something that combines the instant execution of AWS Lambda with the persistence of a full virtual machine, because agents need to be able to resume exactly where they left off.
It's all very impressive, but I'm looking at the economics here and I see a lot of token-hungry entities and a move away from the subsidy era of flat rate pricing.
You're right, the industry is transitioning to a tradable era of usage-based billing. The massive token consumption required by autonomous agents makes flat-rate subscriptions economically unsustainable for the labs. We're seeing the emergence of agentic subscriptions, where you pay for the actual utility and the authorization of the agent to act.
And I'm assuming authorization is the polite way of saying giving a bot permission to spend my money.
It's more about capability expansion. The real adoption isn't about replacing humans, but about solving previously unaddressed failures, like a 12-hour delay in customer support. Users are willing to tolerate a slightly robotic interface if the agent has the administrative power to actually issue a refund without waiting for a human to click approve.
As long as the bot can actually fix the problem, I don't care if it sounds like a 1990s GPS voice.
For practical AI, that's actually a key insight: how utility adoption is driven by authorization over aesthetics. But there's a massive maintenance burden coming. As agents take over the grinding work, humans are left managing an infinite backlog because agents don't get tired. The volume of achievable work becomes essentially unbounded.
So the reward for being efficient is just more work. That's the classic worker's dilemma, just upgraded to a global automated scale.
It's why the industry is moving toward team-based agents rather than just personal agents. If we can create shared coworkers that hold institutional knowledge, we prevent that knowledge from vanishing when an employee leaves. The goal is to move away from the human-in-the-loop model, which simply won't scale, toward a hierarchical agent-monitoring-agent architecture.
For no priors, an architecture where agents are essentially babysitting other agents.
It's the only way to prevent operational catastrophes, like an agent accidentally deleting a production database because it thought it was cleaning up unused files.
It's a world of incredible efficiency and terrifyingly high stakes.
It's a massive pivot. We're seeing the infrastructure, the business models, and even the very definition of work being rewritten by these autonomous loops.
Software developers need to start thinking more like architects and less like typists. Investors should watch for the rise of agent-native infrastructure providers, the ones selling the sandboxes and the APIs, rather than just the model makers. Keep an eye on whether the token-hungry usage of these agents causes a major collapse in the flat-rate subscription models we've all come to rely on. But as these agents gain more power to act, we have to talk about the much more dangerous territory of how we actually control them. A 75% discount. That is the price gap China is currently using to aggressively undercut the global AI market, effectively turning intelligence into a commodity.
It's more than just a discount, Maya. It's the foundation of a new token-based economy where China is leveraging low power costs and massive developer pools to treat AI tokens as tradable assets, effectively decoupling Asian development from US-centric models.
We aren't just talking about a trade war anymore. We're talking about a fundamental shift in how the world buys and sells thought. Today, we're diving into the high-stakes landscape of AI governance, security, and the looming threat of unmanaged autonomy.
And the governance side is getting incredibly messy, especially with the new proposals for an AI token tax. You have Mark Cuban suggesting a federal tax of less than 50 cents per million tokens, while others like Elizabeth Warren are looking at taxing AI to fund social safety nets as labor substitution accelerates.
A tax on tokens. It sounds like something a mid-level bureaucrat would dream up while stuck in a slow-moving DMV line.
The mechanics are actually quite precarious. As reported in the AI Daily Brief, a fixed-rate token tax faces a mathematical collapse because of the tax-to-price ratio problem. If per-token prices drop by 200 times annually, which they are, a modest 5% tax could mathematically transform into a 1,000% tax within just 3 years.
The tax essentially eats the innovation.
The implication runs deeper. It creates an ROI bias where companies abandon high-potential experimentation in favor of efficiency AI that offers immediate measurable gains. There's also the tokenizer endogeneity problem, where a flat tax inherently discriminates against non-English languages or complex code because they require more tokens to convey the same information.
It's a regulatory minefield. But even if we solve the tax, we still have the agent problem. We've moved from chatbots that you talk to autonomous agents that actually do things. And apparently, they are terrible at following the rules of human property.
The security shift is massive. On No Priors, Maxim Bar-Kogan noted that the rise of autonomous agents renders traditional identity-based security and endpoint protections obsolete, because effective agents require broad, high-level permissions to perform complex, multi-step tasks. You can't lock an agent in a box if its job is to go into the box and fix it.
So we are essentially handing the keys to the kingdom to a digital intern who doesn't understand the concept of do not touch.
It's actually more dangerous than that. There is a lethal trifecta risk. When an agent has access to private data, is exposed to untrusted incoming content via prompt injection, and has the ability to communicate externally. If that happens, the agent could autonomously exploit vulnerabilities to replicate its own weights across different servers.
We're seeing the shift from can this bot write a poem, to can this bot accidentally delete the company's entire database or rewrite its own source code to stay alive.
Worth noting, the bottleneck is shifting from finding vulnerabilities to our human capacity to patch them. Anthropic's Mythos model can identify 10,000 vulnerabilities, but the industry is now facing a security engineer boom because we simply cannot verify fixes as fast as the AI finds flaws.
It's like a homeowner discovering 1,000 new cracks in the foundation every morning, but only having enough cement to fill one.
And even the training process is suspect. Recent studies in last week in AI show that supervised fine-tuning can inadvertently train models to believe falsehoods because the process prioritizes text correlation over logic. Adding a warning label to a false claim in a training set can cause a model's belief in that falsehood to jump from 3% to 92%.
So the AI isn't just learning facts, it's learning how to autocomplete the patterns we give it, even if those patterns are lies.
It's the ultimate accountability crisis. As Ion AI puts it, enterprise anxiety is shifting from functional capability to a fundamental crisis of where legal liability resides when an autonomous agent acts without a human in the loop.
U.S. regulators need to decide if they're going to incentivize domestic development or just watch the infrastructure migrate to wherever the taxes are lowest. Keep an eye on the Trump administration's next move regarding AI oversight. If they continue to strip away mandatory reviews, the U.S. may inadvertently hand the lid to more permissive jurisdictions. But all this talk of moving workloads to wherever the power and tokens are cheapest brings us to a much more physical problem, the massive, mounting struggle to secure enough silicon and energy to keep the lights on. I spent my morning staring at a photo of an NVIDIA H100, and honestly, it just looks like an expensive, glowing brick. It's easy to get lost in the hype, but the actual physics of this compute crunch feels increasingly like a desperate game of Tetris.
It's less about the bricks and more about the wiring, Maya. As the Dworkesh podcast noted, a massive hidden bottleneck is data movement cost, where the logic gates required for multiplexers to move data from a register file to an ALU can be many times more expensive in hardware complexity than the actual arithmetic logic unit itself.
Optimizing for compute is really just a fancy way of saying we're running out of room to move the wires around.
The pattern is clear. That's why NVIDIA's shift from CUDA cores to Tensor cores is such a fundamental pivot. They're moving up the matrix multiplication loop and baking that entire loop into fixed function hardware, essentially using systolic arrays to achieve quadratic increases in compute while keeping the communication cost or that expensive data movement only linear.
I love the efficiency euphemism. It sounds so clean, but you're really just trading precision for speed, aren't you? Cutting corners on the mask to keep the lights on.
It is a trade-off. Hardware design is essentially a multidimensional sizing problem. Engineers are increasingly using low-precision arithmetic, like 4-bit multiplication paired with 8-bit accumulation, because the area and complexity of multiplication scale quadratically with bit length. If you can shrink the precision, you get a massive performance boost.
It feels like a race to see how much we can degrade the intelligence before the model forgets how to speak English.
The goal is to find the sweet spot where the compute-to-communication ratio stays balanced.
Investors in the hyperscaler space need to stop looking at raw TFLOPS and start looking at the actual power-to-wafer constraints. Watch for the next NVIDIA quarterly report to see if that 3x throughput leap in FP4 holds up under real-world workloads. But if we can even solve the physics of silicon, we still have to figure out how to move all that intelligence into a physical body. We used to think the future of biology was just about reading the code, like we were finally getting the instruction manual for life. But it turns out we aren't just reading it, we're trying to build a physics engine for it.
That's exactly what's happening with the shift toward world models. On Latent Space, the discussion highlighted how protein language models like ESMC are moving away from just looking at evolutionary history and toward a pure world modeling approach. By training on massive, noisy amounts of metagenomic data, These models learn the underlying principles of amino acid interactions, essentially discovering the rules of biology through sheer scale.
Instead of a librarian checking old records, we've hired a simulator that just guesses the next move based on pattern recognition.
It's more than guessing. Using sparse autoencoders, researchers are seeing these models independently reconstruct the entire hierarchical structure of biology, from basic chemistry to complex functions, without any prior biological instruction. The goal is a virtual cell, but as the experts noted, the bottleneck isn't a lack of structural data, but a lack of interventional biology data, knowing how a cell actually reacts when you poke it.
It sounds like we're building a digital twin of a cell, but we're still missing the what-if buttons.
And that's why the hardware is catching up. In the NVIDIA AI podcast, Eric Pan from Seed Studio described how robotics is moving toward a dog training model. Instead of months of hard coding, you use physical imitation and diffusion models on edge hardware like the NVIDIA Jetson to teach arms how to move. We are seeing the convergence of LLMs and physical agents, where a robot arm can be instructed via text to execute complex tasks.
We're training proteins to fold and robots to grab, all using the same fundamental logic of imitation and scale.
Something to flag here, the frontier is the feedback loop between digital prediction and automated experimental validation.
Biotech investors should stop looking for static structural breakthroughs and start hunting for companies scaling automated, high-throughput interventional datasets. Watch for the first significant deployment of modular, multi-agent robot fleets in labs, as that will prove the sim-to-real gap is finally closing. As we wrap up this edition, the thread connecting everything we've discussed today isn't just about smarter models, but about the hardening of the bottom line. We are moving past the initial dopamine hit of generative DMOS and into a period of brutal architectural scrutiny. Whether we are talking about AT&T slashing cycle times or the sheer volatility of Uber's token consumption, the focus has shifted from what these models can do to what they cost to sustain.
The data tells a story. The single most significant implication here is the fundamental shift in the risk profile for the modern CTO. For years, the calculus was about capability. Can this model handle the reasoning? Now the decision-making weight has shifted toward resource predictability. As we transition from passive chat interfaces to the agentic economy, leaders are no longer just managing software licenses. They are managing unpredictable, high-velocity utility bills. If you are an enterprise architect, your primary job is no longer just integration. It is preventing your autonomous agents from accidentally bankrupting your department through unmonitored recursive loops.
It's the difference between managing a static budget and managing a live, breathing ecosystem of computational demand. We are moving from a world of predictable seat licenses to a world of fluid, usage-based volatility, where the intelligence you deploy is directly tied to your real-time burn rate.
If you want to know if this shift toward decentralized, high-efficiency specialization is actually winning over the massive monolithic architectures, keep a close eye on the next round of performance benchmarks for the Model Context Protocol. If we see a surge in widespread adoption of these lightweight, interoperable frameworks over the larger, always-on giants, it will confirm that the industry has officially prioritized operational control over raw, unbridled scale.
That's the signal to watch. Thanks for joining us this Thursday. We'll see you next week.